Welcome to The Last American Vagabond. Many today are currently lost in the propaganda machine that was revitalized after the 2016 election, and which successfully folded so many independent thinkers right back into the two-party manipulation they had once fought so dutifully against, all because they were convinced that an outsider had won, not realizing that there is no winning if still playing their game. It has become more clear than ever that the so-called outsider is nothing more than a manufactured anti-establishment candidate because they did their homework and gave the people what they thought they wanted, as they all too often do. But what if there was another option, one outside the false two-party paradigm, one that most have been conditioned to see as wrong or anti-American, when in fact it's quintessentially American, the epitome of what this country's supposed to represent, the will of the people, challenging authority, standing against a tyrannical government. And that option is the peaceful and responsible dissolution of the federal government, that which many feel represents all that is wrong with the current state of this nation, and a hierarchical power that simply should not exist in its current state under the Constitution of the United States. This is exactly what one presidential candidate for 2020 is proposing, and that is Adam Kokesh. Thank you for joining me today, Adam. It's an honor to have you on the show.
Well, thank you so much, Ryan. That was a great introduction. I've never had such a beautiful intellectual setup for what we're about to discuss. And you know what? You actually just gave me a really important realization here, is that the American people have wanted an outsider for a president for a long time. Donald Trump was an outsider. Barack Obama was an outsider. Even George Bush was an outsider. Even Clinton was portrayed in some ways as an outsider of the Democratic Party. And what have we gotten? More of the same, more growth of government, and it's time for it to come to an end. And the fundamental shift. The other thing that you said about so many in independent media who had done so much work, and I love pointing this out to people when they say that, you know, well, Trump at least gets credit for, you know, changing America's relationship with the mainstream media. No, he gets credit for taking credit for how the independent media changed America's relationship with the mainstream media. And it is so sad to see so many of those independent media outlets no longer independent because they are now establishment media supporting the establishment, even though they're not enjoying corporate sponsorship, which is just doubly pathetic. But yes, the American people are fed up of this, with all of this. And I think there is a very clear growing realization that we do not need to be united under one government to be united in American values. And the sooner we get rid of the federal government, the happier we'll be.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that the point you make there is so important, that so many today are in the independent media. And I think what they did in a way is they realized that mainstream media was failing. We were beginning to see through the facade. And so they figured out a way to basically manipulate people into thinking that, you know, a lot of independent media today is just as bad as the mainstream media. And it's important for us to begin to realize that. But to start out, I kind of wanted to touch on something that happened in the past. Many might not know, but you were one of the first people that really inspired me to do what I'm doing today. And it all stemmed for me from one of your many unjust arrests for simply exercising your constitutional rights in Washington, D.C., I believe back in 2013, where you basically had a shotgun out on the street and took a video of loading it. And I mean, I can let you explain it, but it truly opened my eyes to the contradiction there. That ultimately, you know, do we have these rights? Are they inalienable or not? I mean, shall not be infringed seems pretty clear to me, yet you exposed this delusion for me. So if you don't mind, can you touch on that event and kind of what you were trying to accomplish?
Sure. Well, you know, it's similar to the dance party at the Jefferson Monument, where we danced where they said we weren't allowed, and the result was a super viral video of me getting choke slammed while dancing by a police officer. And with that, what we wanted to show was that when government says you can't dance here, it means that if you dance here, you will be violently assaulted. You will be physically accosted and locked in a cage and taken away forcefully. And we want to do the same thing with gun control, to show that gun control is a violent policy. There really is no such thing as gun control. That's a really dangerous propaganda term, because when you say you want gun control, I mean, that's, gun control is supposed to be hitting your target, but gun control means that you want government to have the guns, and only government to have the guns, and to be able to point them at any private citizens who would also assert their right to defend themselves with firearms. And so I loaded a shotgun in Freedom Plaza, the ironically named Freedom Plaza, two blocks from the White House, for a very brief YouTube video. It's kind of a hit and run piece of civil disobedience there. And thanks to the United States Park Police, in terms of proving that gun control is a violent policy, we succeeded beyond our wildest dreams. My house was raided with two helicopters circling overhead, an armored vehicle out front. They broke down the front door of my house. And Baloo, my dog, had a flashbang grenade thrown at him. And it actually saved his life because he ran away from the cops. And I was standing at the top of the stairs in front of the front door with my hands up and three green laser sights pointed at my chest as he was scared running up the stairs. And I'm going, Baloo, bed, 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 as in, you know, go to your crate so you don't get shot. And you know, he fortunately, obviously, he didn't get shot. He's with us today on the road. And my home was ransacked, turned inside out. My safe was busted open. My entire firearms collection, including things that were not firearms, also things that were legal, were stolen from me. The house was turned inside out. My housemates, the people living with me, interns and staff at the time, were accosted as well. And it was, I ended up doing 4 months in jail for that.
Yeah, it really, like I said, it really for me exposed one of the largest contradictions we see today, that it's, you know, it's your right to own a firearm. I mean, it is in the Constitution. There's no denying that. Yet they showed up with such an overzealous show of force, SWAT and AK-47s and kicking your door down and basically, go ahead.
More men than they sent after Osama bin Laden.
That's such an interesting point to make. It was meant to intimidate, right? That's the ultimate point. And that you didn't do anything against the law, you know? And so that's like I said, it really woke me up to the idea that there is a contradiction between what we believe we have as rights and what's actually true. And that's something that I really appreciate what you do. It really does. It highlights that contradiction. And it's so very important. There was another one just recently, I believe you had another incident, right, where they ransacked your RV and you were arrested as well. Can you touch on that one for me?
Yes, this was right after we announced my campaign for president, having formally filed the paperwork and launched our website with an email and a press release. And within minutes, I was pulled over driving through Texas, and I was evangelizing to the officer who pulled me over, of course, and broadcasting it on Facebook Live. And I gave him a copy of my book, and he gave me a warning for, you know, driving erratically. And then, everything was okay with the paperwork at that point, but I was pulled over again just 40 minutes later. And this time the officer, as you can tell from the video, was determined that I was gonna leave in handcuffs. And he violated police procedure, he violated the law, he violated my constitutional rights, he violated common sense, my property, my home, in so many disgusting ways. And the funny thing is, this is actually relatively typical for an experience, not the timing, obviously. It's not typical to announce that you're running for president in Texas, but it is typical to experience the blunt end of the drug war. And The difference in my case was that I was broadcasting live. What they normally do is if you start recording, well, now you're definitely going to jail and we'll just erase the footage while you're locked up. And it is such a dangerous, destructive racket. But in my case, they pulled me over, said I was speeding, going 74 and a 65 or something like that. And they asked me a bunch of illegal questions, actually, about the ownership of the vehicle, the legal status. I was able to present registration and insurance and all that. They asked for me to get the owner of the vehicle. I'm not the legal owner of this vehicle, even though I'm the one paying for it. To get him on the phone, I got him on the phone. I mean, it was absurd. And they ended up bringing out a drug dog. Now, my dog, Baloo, is traveling with me. Baloo, you're going to have to come say hi again. All right, he's over there licking himself. Baloo! Baloo! People want to say hi again. Baloo, come here. There's Baloo. There's Baloo. Oh, good boy. Yes, Baloo is a survivor of police brutality. And in this case, he actually did a night in doggy jail as well. But he was here inside the RV. And by the way, when we got locked up, we got 10 times as many emails of concern for him than for me, which, by the way, is totally appropriate. But when they had the drug dog, you know, searching or sniffing the vehicle, which, you know, there's drug dogs are really just probable cause generators. They're excuses for cops to violate your rights, to violate your person, your vehicle, et cetera, your home. And in this case, while the dog was on the outside sniffing the vehicle, Baloo was on the inside. They didn't have me remove Baloo first. And when the drug dog hit on the vehicle at the door to the RV, Baloo was on the other side of the door whining. It's just, and I have video of this, not just, I have my video from the outside from my phone showing this, and I was able to hit post and, you know, make sure that it was posted live before, they were able to erase the footage from my phone. Of course, my phone has a security lock on it, so they weren't able to get into it anyway. But I also had a video camera on the inside, and this is where I wonder, you know, I know how evil you have to be to sign up to be a cop. You know, you have to be willing to put ethics aside. You have to be willing to say, okay, yeah, I'll violate people's rights. I'll do unethical things as long as you pay me and protect me, you know, but they turned off the camera when they came into the vehicle. They turned off the video camera in here, not erased the footage, because they could have stolen the memory card. They could have, you know, whatever, but no, they just turned it off and then did whatever it was, you know, they did in ransacking the vehicle. You know, if you have nothing to, if you're not doing anything wrong, you should have nothing to hide. Why would you stop the recording? But, you know, I ended up doing 10 days in jail, and there are now some various conspiracy theories as to why this happened. And when I see the uncertainty and that there are various plausible explanations, you know, I like to assign percentages to different possibilities of probability. And I'm always very careful, never assign to, or never ascribe to conspiracy that which can be adequately explained by incompetence. And there's obviously plenty of incompetence in government to go around, but it's so suspicious. If you watch the entire 30-minute video, and we've posted it everywhere at this point, of this arrest, then you can tell that the officer who pulled me over, like I said, was determined to arrest me. So the question is, what is the explanation for that? Was he ordered to do that? Now, the non-conspiracy explanation is that it was all just a coincidence. Just a coincidence of timing, just a coincidence that there were two instances of getting pulled over, just a coincidence that, you know, I got arrested the way that I did on the second incident. But you go, well, what are the odds of that? They gotta be pretty darn low. So, you know, maybe that's, you know, at most maybe 10% odds. Hey, it's just a coincidence. The drug war really is just that evil. And just that. And hey, if that's the case, if it really is just a coincidence, hey, all the more reason to support my campaign to dissolve the federal government and end the drug war once and for all, obviously. But if it's a conspiracy, that doesn't make it any better. And so of the other 90% possibilities here, right, you know, some people say, oh, must have been Donald Trump or someone in Donald Trump's camp going, we got to squash that competition early for 2020. And I don't think that's very likely either. You know, maybe a small percentage on the other range. But because I gave my book to the first cop, you know, he's probably looking through and going, oh, Adam Kokesh, where do I know that name? Oh, that's the freedom guy. That's the guy who wants to end the drug war and rein in police abuse. Well, we don't take too kindly to them types around here. So, hey, let me call ahead and get the next cop to harass this guy and see if he can arrest him. And, you know, maybe that's all it was. And I think that's the most likely possibility. But some people have also suggested that my opponent for 2020, Bill Weld, who is a non-libertarian who has infiltrated the Libertarian Party and was the vice presidential nominee with another non-libertarian, Gary Johnson, in 2016, because he's a former prosecutor, state attorney, something like that, with plenty of government connections to people who are willing to do evil, that you know, that he might have been behind it, that he called it in, especially since that same weekend coming up after the arrest was his big soft launch for his campaign, with not even a documentary preview and a panel and a fundraiser at the Sundance Film Festival. By the way, Sundance had to send him a cease and desist letter. Please stop using our branding. For his documentary produced by a known convicted pedophile, unrepented repeat offender, by the way, who just... If you want to be serious about the Libertarian Party, yeah, you don't bring pedophiles to the party with you. I'm sorry, Mr. Weld. But the problem with Bill Weld is it should be really obvious, not just that, you know, he's got all these problems with corruption and the people around him and all of that, but that he's not a libertarian. And that means he's not an ethical person, because being a libertarian simply means that you stand up for universal, consistent ethics. That, you know, the non-aggression principle, that you don't use violence against peaceful people. And that's all it comes down to. So if you embrace that consistently, you have to see that there's a problem with letting people into the party of principle who don't share our principle.
Absolutely agree. And what I think is important, in my opinion, I would say, I mean, my mind always tends to lean more towards the conspiratorial aspect. I would say it's probably a combination of all of them. I mean, I think just simply because you're an anti-establishment entity, right? That, I mean, clearly there's something there kind of putting the you know, the government hand down on you, I think, but who knows? You're right. I mean, ultimately we don't know, but at the end of the day, your rights were violated. I think that's what ultimately matters. And what to me stands out is that whether we're talking about the gun issue or the recent one, it's regardless of how people may feel about the action, like even saying that the one with the shotgun on the street, it doesn't matter how you may feel about that. It is your right. And so there should not even be an option to violate that. But again, it all comes back to the fact that that no longer truly matters. And I think that's why what you're doing is so very important. I think there's been a lot of different precedents set recently. There was an incident just, I think only a few weeks ago, where there was a couple that got arrested and basically sent to jail for basically nothing. They had owned a store that only sold gun accessories. I don't know if you heard the case, and they got pulled over. They got pulled over for, you know, a taillight, which is interesting. It's the same thing that you were talking about. There's always this kind of scapegoat excuse. Oh, well, we saw the taillight, but it's not out, but don't worry about that now. Now we have a probable cause. You know, it's like, it goes on like that. So clearly there's ways that they circumvent our rights. Right. And I think it just has to continue to stand out to us. So what you're proposing, I think it appeals to more people than I think they have even realized yet, right? I mean, once they begin to understand what you're trying to accomplish. And so that's perfect for us to get right into, you know, your candidacy here and what you're trying to accomplish in general. So for those who may not be aware of your candidacy and what you're generally proposing, can you outline your primary goals and how you aim to accomplish those if and when you're elected?
Sure. I'm running for president in 2020 on the platform of a peaceful, orderly, responsible dissolution of the entire federal government of the United States. And every time I say that I'm running for president, I cringe a little bit, because I don't think there's anything more anti-freedom you can say than I want to be president of the United States. I want to be in charge of this violent monopoly. I want to be able to force my will on the entire country and even the entire world. But I have to point out that I'm really not running for president in order to be president, because I am only going to do one thing as president, and that is to sign an executive order in which I resign, and instead of being president, become custodian of the federal government. The first thing that we do with this is declare the federal government of no authority whatsoever. So no federal laws are going to be enforced from the moment that executive order is signed. And I am going in as a bankruptcy agent. So my role as custodian of the federal government is to dissolve the federal government in a way that repays the true creditors. So every agency of the federal government will either be liquidated, localized, or spun off as a private institution. So, you know, Department of Education, Department of Energy, Department of Commerce, the IRS, you know, these federal regulatory agencies, and of course, I mean, the IRS does more than just regulate. They actually, you know, steal from people, because taxation is theft. You know, they just go away. 95% of the personnel get sent home immediately. We have to have a skeleton crew there to handle the records and the physical properties. One of the cool things about this platform is that we get to release all the records right away. Excuse me, I take that back. Not right away. We get to release all the records as soon as we responsibly can, because there is one important caveat to that you cannot release private personal information that should not be made public. So the records from every federal agency are going to get sent to a central agency. Call me a statist if you will. I want to see one federal agency continue to carry out this function for as long as necessary as the keeper of the records. Maybe the Library of Congress could fill that role. But basically, as soon as the records can be cleared of the redacted information, public on the internet, no more secrets, no more lies. All the patents, technologies, everything else developed by the federal government is now public domain. Then the physical properties will be liquidated. And as a bankruptcy agent, my fiduciary responsibility is to repay the true creditors of the American government. And that's not the foreign banks, foreign governments, foreign corporations that hold the debt on paper. No, we are disowning that. And the federal national debt, we really shouldn't call it the national debt. It's the debt of the federal government. What it represents is intergenerational child abuse, because it is just horrifically wrong to force your children to pay for stuff that they never had a say in. It's insane. And so that we're writing that debt off and it's gone. The true creditors are the American people. And so much has been stolen from us that it's going to be impossible to return it all perfectly fairly. But the way that we can do this as best we possibly can is to fund Social Security, the VA, possibly Medicare, Medicaid, SCHIP, things like that, as private institutions spun off that are funded by the liquidated assets of the federal government. At very least, Social Security will be funded for decades, allowing the states and the market and individuals to come up with far better alternatives. Like I said, we don't want to pull the rug out from underneath anyone, except maybe the IRS. So then some agencies that do perform legitimate functions like the Department of Transportation can be localized, that is apportioned among the states, not that difficult a process. Now, for the bigger agencies like the CIA, FBI, NSA, Department of Defense, there's a much bigger challenge there, and those processes will take several years. With the Department of Defense, you immediately bring all the troops home from abroad, again, except a skeleton crew for those individual bases to handle the records, to sell those bases. You bring home all the weaponry. Everything that's offensive is de-weaponized and sold for industrial purposes that go into the general fund for all the agencies that we want to continue as private institutions. The result of that will leave us with defensive military resources only, which will then be apportioned among the states. And when we're done, we have 50 independent states, 5 autonomous territories, and up to 562 sovereign native nations. We don't have to be united under one government to be united in American values, and America is certainly too good for this government.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds, rational and fantastic. I mean, I love that you have really taken the time to think all, which I wouldn't put it, think anything less. I mean, clearly you've taken the time to really plan this out. I love to see that. But it kind of represents what it seems like the country was supposed to be like, right? Kind of in the beginning. But I'm sure many no doubt have their apprehensions, right? In hearing such a plan, largely because of what they've been falsely conditioned to believe is necessary for society to function. So how would this affect the average American if this were to be implemented, if at all?
Well, right away you get safer, freer, and richer. So I haven't really heard any apprehensions in those terms. I think the apprehensions really are about keeping the federal government going and electing another president. We don't need a president. We don't need the federal government. We would be far better off without them, because ultimately we'd be better off with no coercion whatsoever. You might say no government, but of course I have no problem with voluntary government. I think the more localized government is, the more voluntary it is. And the ultimate goal here is to get government down to the community and individual level, self-government. So when we get rid of the federal government, it might take 5 to 10 years for the entire process to be complete. It might take 10 years for the states to feel like they're stable. But as soon as people see the benefits, which is on day one, they're going to be going, gee, localization's really good for us. It's really good for freedom. It's really good for people. Let's keep going. And there's going to be a race among the states to dissolve the state governments and get government down to the county level. And, of course, county governments should also dissolve and get down to the community, maybe city, individual level. But as libertarians, when we get government all the way down to the county level, we're done. I can retire at that point. I'm really not concerned. You know, there might be we get rid of government, and there's a long tail at the end when we get government so local to the community level that, you know, for it to be fully displaced by voluntary means. At some point, we're going to be looking at very small local governments and going, gee, I can't even tell if it's voluntary or not, but I can leave at any time and I can secede with my own property, so I really don't care. And I mean, if you can secede on your own property, it's essentially voluntary. You are, if you are under a government or part of a government type organization at that point, it's by choice. Now, there is one apprehension that some people bring up, but it's a really rather silly one, is that won't we be vulnerable to foreign attack? And of course not. We're going to be safer because, as the founders advocated, we should have much more of a militia-based defense than a military-based defense. Militaries defend government's ability to rule people, while militias defend a free people. And if China, it's not like the American government is going to be able to disappear without anybody noticing in the age of the internet, obviously. So we're going to see a global domino effect from this. It's not like China's government is going to be able to go, all right, America is weak, let's go invade. No, because people all over the world are going to be looking at their governments going, do we really need you? And the answer in the age of the internet, of course, is going to be an overwhelming no. People all over the world are going to demand freedom. This is, for me, you know, I've railed against the concept of patriotism, because when your love for country is defined by government borders, you really are showing that you're not free. But there is something that makes me proud of America, that makes me patriotic, and it's that we were founded on overthrowing the largest empire the world had ever known, and we got to lead the world forward in freedom, and we get to do that again, incidentally, by once again overthrowing the largest empire the world has ever known.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's again, when discussing apprehensions, clearly, as you know, I agree with everything we're talking about here. The apprehensions stem from the fact that they're falsely conditioned to see things in a way that they not really are, right? They believe that it's an interesting point that I've seen James Corbett make a lot, because one of the next questions was going to be discussing things like that, like the worrying about other countries. And it's the question always is, like, one, the joke he makes is, oh, well, who's going to build the roads? And it's like, the people are still here. We're all still here. All the people in the military, we're all still here, right? It's the only thing that's not there anymore is the overarching government hand that's having the control over it, right? So it's not like we don't have the militia, is the great point to make there, right? That all the people are still here. We still have all of the same outlets. It's just simply the entity telling us what to do is no longer there, right? So it's a deception at the end of the day, that people believe that we need that to be able to effectively defend ourselves, which is not the case, right? And it's an interesting point to make there. But one thing that I think for those unfamiliar with your work, right, and your passion for this project, I mean, clearly watching this interview already, they can see the passion behind what you do and your conviction behind it. But the question they might ask is, how can they be sure that you will not simply get elected and choose to remain as president?
Oh, that's easy. And if I may answer that with a slightly different question and then come to answer it at the end, sometimes people ask, Adam, you can't do that. It's not constitutional. Is it constitutional? Heck no, it's not constitutional. That's kind of the point. We are invoking the higher authority known as the Declaration of Independence, which says we have not only a right but a duty to alter and abolish systems of government that no longer serve us. And when the American people decide through the American electoral process, irrefutably, undeniably, that we will no longer tolerate the existence of the federal government, no asshole in a suit in Washington, D.C., no congressman, no senator, no Supreme Court justice is going to stand in our way. Not even this asshole in a suit. So if on day one, you know, they come to me and they go, hey, sir, here's the, Mr. President, here's the executive order to dissolve the federal government. And I say, you know what? why don't you bring me the dictator for life executive order? Let me sign that one instead. Shoot me. Just shoot me. Now, okay, seriously, I hope you don't have to shoot me. I hope you can find a way to, like, carry me away in a straitjacket and give me a chance to come to my senses. But at that point, it really won't matter because the American people will have decided that we are withdrawing our support from the existence of the federal government at all, from this criminal, abusive racket. And if someone tries to stand in the way, it's not going to matter. If they shoot me before I get inaugurated, doesn't matter. Someone else will sign the executive order. The decision will have been collectively made and irrevocably proven that this is the will of the people. So the victory, even then, the victory is not even in the election. And we're not going to be able to win with, 34% to the old parties, 33. They're going to cheat. We're going to have to win the exit polls. We're going to have to win with such an overwhelming shift in the general paradigm before the election. We're going to have to win with something like 60, maybe even 70%. But considering that it's only, 60% of Americans who vote consistently in presidential elections and in special elections and local elections and off-year elections, the number's closer to 30%. It's really just 30% of the people who are like, yeah, red team go, blue team go, we got to vote like it's our duty. And even if none of them change their minds, if none of those Republicans and Democrats wake up, the other 70% far outnumber them.
Absolutely. And I think to some degree, that's kind of what we saw a small portion of that get kind of, woken during this last election, or like, deceptively so, but they triggered something in them. And we saw like a lot of these, this big, dumb, sleeping giant kind of wake up and vote for the wrong person. And so that's something I think we need to see happen moving forward. I absolutely agree. There is a entirely untapped portion of America out there that needs to begin to see the logic in what you're talking about here. Now, one thing that I think that you pretty much already just explained, but I think a lot of these questions I'm asking are for maybe the person watching this that's kind of on the fence, that doesn't understand why this is good and what we're kind of talking about. Right now, one of my biggest concerns and my biggest issues with what's going on today, obviously I have a large concern with what's going on at home, but is our foreign policy and the way that what we're doing around the world. So how would what you're doing affect U.S. foreign policy moving forward, or would there even be a U.S. foreign policy? And not necessarily militarily, but just in general.
Right. Well, some people think that having a military is very isolationist, that it isolates the American people from the rest of the world. And I totally agree. I think it's very dangerous to have, what we call foreign policy conducted by the government and by the military, as opposed to peaceful people and trade and commerce and peace and harmony. And that's the shift. Instead of the face of America to the world being, the major corporations that are supported by free trade agreements and the barrel of a gun presented by the United States military and drone strikes that kill children at wedding parties, instead, it's the American people who are the most productive, most generous, most innovative in the entire world, going out and sharing the bounty of our economy with the rest of the world, engaging people in free trade and commerce. So most of the animosity that the rest of the world feels for the American people is not for the people, excuse me, not for America, is not for the American people, but for the American government. And while the American people are very confused about this, or at least some of them are, by the U.S. federal government's propaganda that has us using this language, we, all the time, like we invaded Iraq, we fought World War, and it's this dangerous nationalism that has you taking credit for things you never did and hating people you've never met. But this, most people in the rest of the world are able to separate the American people from the American government. And I think this is how we get rid of that leech on the American people that is holding us back, the federal government. And I think nowhere is that more clear than in foreign policy, because the American people are very loving, very generous, and very open. And yet we are prevented, we are isolated from interacting with the rest of the world, because instead of being able to engage directly with people as much as we want, we are impeded by the American government and the U.S. military.
Absolutely. And I honestly couldn't agree with you more. And I'm really glad that we had the time to have this conversation, because it's something that truly, truly the American people need to begin to recognize, I mean, more so than anything, need to begin to stand back and realize that we have more options than we're being presented with. And I think that's something that's very important for us to see. And I think that it's one of the biggest deceptions taking place today, you know, that you have this choice or this choice, right? Pick A or B, and then you feel like you live in a democracy or you have freedom. And in reality, we're being, you know, pushed into these two boxes and being forced to choose. And it's something that needs to begin to stand out to people. So thank you so much for joining me today. Is there anything else you'd like to leave for the people and you know, take away with them and discuss moving forward?
Sure. Well, I think the greatest accomplishment of my career as an activist so far is having written the book on freedom. And I started writing this when I was in jail for civil disobedience in Washington, D.C. I'm not the best author in the freedom movement. I'm the best ripoff artist in the freedom movement, because while I was in jail, people sent me all the best books about freedom, and I combined all of their strengths and none of their weaknesses into one easy to digest ultimate red pill. And I say that with all humility, because I had a lot of help putting this book together, polishing it, making it everything that it can be. And a big part of this campaign is getting this book in front of as many people as possible. We're about to put 205,000 copies out there, one in every single mailbox in New Orleans, right before the Libertarian National Convention. And you can get it, as it says here, for free, download it for free in every digital format, including audiobook, at thefreedomline.com. And if you get it there, really appreciate that. Please share it with someone. And if you want to help get involved with the campaign, you can find my website for the campaign through my main website, thefreedomline.com. And I hope you join the Libertarian Party at lp.org as well, and help be a part of making this critical change happen for the world.
Fantastic. And I hope you know you wholeheartedly have my support, Adam. So I really hope that we see this change, and I will absolutely advocate it for going forward. So maybe we can touch base in a few months and as we get closer to 2020 and see where we're at.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, brother.
All right. Hope to talk to you soon. Everyone out there, stay vigilant. We'll be right back.
Oh,